the sound. And get crazy, have some fun. Hello and welcome to the Dad Podcast. I am your host, Justin Worsham. This is my second go around trying to record this. I ran into some technical issues as per usual. If you are a person who listens to this show every week as it is released, you will probably notice I've been gone for, I think, a couple months. Somebody in the chat room said four. I would not be beyond that. I think it's closer to like 2.5, maybe 3. But if you are playing catch up or just found the show, you don't care. But I will tell you that if you are new to the show and this is the first episode that you're picking up, I would say go back or maybe go ahead a few. Because this is not a normal episode. And I honestly don't know how funny it will be. I'm not going to try to make it funny. But we've been through some stuff. So I'm just going to come out and say it. I apologize for being so dramatic on Facebook, but it was not my place to say. What happened was about towards the end of February, maybe beginning of March, Natalie's mom went in for an operation, and they found what was about the size of, I think, a grapefruit, 8 centimeters, or I think it was 8 inches, actually, a growth in her abdomen. So she went in to have it removed. And Natalie went up north to take care of her dad because he's had some strokes in the last, like, 7 years. And she wanted to go, because I said, I go there because there's not going to be anybody there to take care of your dad. If he falls or something like that, nobody's going to know for quite a few days. So she went up there and mom went to the hospital. Everything was fine. And then she, came back home, and the day after Natalie came home the next day, I didn't think this was going to happen. The next day her dad had a stroke, and it was a small one. Everybody was like, oh, it's fine. It's no big deal. And, so they took him to the hospital. And so now he's like, oh, maybe I should go back up there. And then 3 days later he had another one. And so very quickly he lost the ability to communicate, except when he was talking to Natalie, and she could figure out a way to, you know, kind of talk to him and, you know, ask him yes or no questions. Sometimes he could get 3 or 4 words out in a sentence, but then everything would just lock up. And for anybody who has dealt with that, who has dealt with somebody who's had a stroke, like it's rough, man. So she kind of stayed up there, and then I'm kind of abbreviating this, and I'm sorry that I'm a little bit all over the place, but I'm excited to do a show, and yet I'm not excited to share this part of it, but I wanted you guys to know why I was gone for so long. He kept progressively getting worse. He was okay at the beginning, and then there was I think he had another, maybe a mini stroke or something, where he kind of went almost catatonic, and that was when it was kind of the beginning of the end. So, needless to say, on Easter Sunday afternoon, he passed away, and we were up there in Northern California helping out and taking care of everything, and I've been managing their money since he got into the hospital, so to make sure all the bills were paid and everything like that. After he passed away, and again, I'm only going to apologize this last time. So, and then I'll just keep moving on, cause I think it creates a speed bump, but I really do apologize because I want this to be a fun show, but I think, as we all know, life fucking happens, and sometimes it sucks. And this was not, as it may sound, this was not a sucky situation, because her mom needed that operation. Natalie got a full week with her dad. Of just them hanging out, eating ice cream, talking, and weirdly enough, just organically, what his wishes were, as they say, came up. So she knew what to do. And this is where it's going to get me. My wife, as much as I give her guff and I tease and I elbow her, and if you've been listening to the show long enough, you know that every once in a while, I say something nice about her, but I was most proud of her when she became a mother. To watch this person who I kind of knew as a younger, you know, quasi immature person, just grow up overnight. I mean, it was insane, and just how tough she became overnight. I don't know if any of you guys have had that experience with your wife, but it was a very, my wife went from being someone who, if she didn't get 8 full hours of sleep, that she would get sick or just fall apart. And now she's like a fucking Navy SEAL. Like, she just goes. And I was very proud of her there, but I have never been more proud of her. I'm sorry. Than in this situation, because she is the youngest child and she dealt with some really, really dark, rough shit and had to make a lot of really hard decisions, including the one. And please, by the way, if you're listening to this live, do not reach out to her on Facebook. She is not that person. Don't send her a message or anything like that. It's not that she wouldn't appreciate it or anything like that. She's not even avoiding it. It's just we're both kind of wired that way where it's, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know. I don't mean to be rude. I know it's a thing that people feel compelled to do, but I'm telling you, she's good. But she did exactly what was right for her dad at every single turn. I mean, right up to the point where she had to have a conversation with a nurse to basically say, let's just make him comfortable until he goes. And sitting next to her when she was on the phone, you know, 300 plus miles away, still handling things. Meanwhile, there are people that are, you know, 20, 30 years older than her, but she's taking care of her father. And he deserved it. He was a very, very good man. You've heard me joke about my mother-in-law. He was a far better man than I could ever be. And she was teasing him and laughing with him, too, at the end when, you know, because when my mother-in-law would show up, she was very nervous and very upset and kind of flitting around. And Natalie was the one who had to kind of manage her and help her, you know, through this whole thing. And she would, you know, walk out of the room and Natalie would look at her dad and say, Dad, Jesus, how do you put up with that shit? You know, and he would smile as best he could. But, I mean, just a champ, my wife. Just took everything on the chin, was strong for everybody, was smart for everybody. So after he passed away, we had to, you know, quickly sell her house. Get her into an apartment because, you know, with finances change. And this is kind of the reason why I want to bring this up is that if anybody's already been through this, you're already sitting there probably with some red eyes yourself and remembering going, fuck, that was crazy. And it's a weird thing about life. They make you take calculus. They make you take, well, maybe not calculus, maybe algebra is a better example. But at no point do they walk you through the Social Security system. At no point do they teach you taxes or survivorship benefits or anything, which is a fucking inevitability. The chances of you using actual algebra in your day-to-day are far less than the chances of you losing a loved one and having to figure out what you're going to do with their finances. I don't know why I said it like that, finances. And so it was tough for us because, you know, we're in our late 30s and I'm calling Social Security to figure out how much is she going to have and all of that. And at some point, if your parents are with you, I don't think if your parents are in their, you know, 60s, I don't necessarily think it's worth having the conversation. But at some point, I think it is worth having a conversation with your folks to A, establish what their wishes are. And then B, just get an idea of the lay of the land. Or maybe you have a sibling who's going to be the one who takes care of it and then it's fine. And I know it's a hard subject to broach, but all I could tell you is that I was under the understanding that when you lost your Social Security or when you lost your loved one, that whoever had the higher amount of Social Security that's the amount that you get. And I think it just naturally can work out that way. But through talking to Social Security multiple times, at least they have this awesome thing that when you call the number, they have an option where you could say, call me back. And so they call you back and like within 3 hours or something. It's not like right away, but then you're not sitting there on hold forever, but they call you back. But I got multiple answers, like different answers from different people. So one guy said that she was only going to get this much. Another guy said that. And so here's what I've learned. I learned that what they do is based on when the other person retires. Okay, so if they retire before 65, then they actually are entitled to a slightly smaller percentage. And then they keep whatever Social Security they're getting, and then they add whatever percentage they're entitled to of the other person's. But like in my mother-in-law's case, it worked out to be about the same as what he was getting. And so that's where I think the confusion gets created. There's also something with pension that is very weird to me, is that like in the instance of my grandfather, when he passed away, he opted to get more money up front, so that but he lost survivorship. And I don't even know if he understood what that meant when he made that decision, because when he passed away, there was no money for my grandmother. Luckily, they were okay and they had their house paid for. And that's the way it's supposed to work, right? This is no secret. The reason a 30-year mortgage exists is because you buy your house when you're 30, and then you work 30 years to pay it off, so that when it's all said and done, you should have less living expenses and therefore able to live on a 401k and maybe a Social Security as a supplemental or whatever. But what I can tell you from my experience, I don't care where you fall politically, is that you cannot rely on Social Security to maintain your lifestyle after you retire. It's nuts. So we had to go up and move her. And when Natalie comes on the show, she will. I'll tell you the story. I'll butcher it a little bit. But while we were moving her mother, my brother-in-law, she has stuff. Oh my gosh, that's the other thing. Get rid of your crap. Holy crap! We keep stuff in our garage that you don't even look at. And I had to have these gut-wrenching conversations with my wife, where she's looking at like papers that she had when she was in kindergarten, and I'm kind of saying like, you know, you could keep a few of it, but what's the point? Like, at this point, we hang on to stuff so that when we pass away, and maybe it's a part of mourning that I just don't understand, but we hang on to all this stuff so that when we pass away, it just makes our kids or whoever have to dig through it or sift through it. And it just, I don't know, maybe there is a catharsis to it, or there is a part of that healing process. All I could tell you is, being the person who was there going through all the stuff, it was rough and it was hard. I mean, it was the right thing to do, so of course we did it, but I'm like, geez, Alou. But my brother-in-law kindly built this like deck in their attic where he would put 2x4s across the rafters and then a sheet of plywood on top of that. And he put boxes up to make room so she could park her car, because they just had a garage full of stuff that they never used. Like, we found probably 8 rolls of Christmas paper that had never been opened, because what happens is they get the Christmas paper and they go, oh, we'll save this for next year because we didn't use it all. And then they stick it in a box and then they forget where they put it. So then you buy more. And I'm just saying, just don't save it, or buy less when you get it. I don't know. Who am I to tell you how to live your fucking life? But as the guy who climbed up in this attic space, and then unbeknownst to him, I mean, he wasn't planning this when he did it, but there were like 150-pound boxes up there, and they insulated it in, and the new owners wanted that insulation of like these foam 2-inch thick foam 8x4. It's almost like plywood or drywall, but it's foam insulation that they screwed to the ceiling, and they wanted that there. So I had to leave it all up, which meant I had to pull it all down from one corner, and I was cursing them because I was exhausted. We started on Friday before Memorial Day. We started at 8 in the morning and did not finish until 12:30 a.m. on Saturday morning, and then we went back at it 8 a.m. on Saturday and did not finish until 11:30 that night, and then came back Sunday morning at about 7 in the morning and worked until 10 or 11. So it was just ick. And I don't mean ick as in I know that I've made fun of my relationship with my in-laws on the show many a time, and I'm not saying ick as in like, oh, these people, they're a horrible burden. That's not my point. My point is that, you know, you deal with all of this and everything had to happen so fast that it was just a lot of everything. And I just didn't feel like I could come on here and do a show because I had so many things going on. So in short, that is exactly why I took the break that I did. And I appreciate your kindness, and not against anybody who didn't message me, but for those of you that commented on Facebook and stuff like that or sent me an email, I appreciate you. That's very kind. I'm a very lucky guy in my own eyes. We'll get back to regular show stuff now. We got that out of the way. It'll be done. There's some exciting stuff down the road. So don't forget, hey, if you want to help support the show, you can support the show by going to Amazon.com, going down to the bottom of the, or no, I'm sorry, go to thedadpodcast.com. My apologies. Go down to the bottom, and if you click on that Amazon banner and bookmark that as your Amazon link, every time you go to Amazon, Daddy gets like a 5% taste. It costs you nothing. All it does is support the show. Okay, so now back to being a dad. What has gone on in the time that we were gone? We did flag football, which I said, I've told about how I made the playbook. I had 36 plays. I was the offensive coordinator. Maybe I'll post it on, I don't know. If I'll have to ask Natalie. She's better at assessing that stuff. You know, people get weird if you post pictures of their kids on there, and I don't know how to blur everybody's faces. But there's a couple of plays that Jacob made. Jack is the little kid, and this is the reason why I'm going to tell the story this way, is that Jacob was just a dynamo, man. He was, no exaggeration, he was in a lot of ways the star of the team and loves it, just loves the game. And makes me feel like a colossal asshole, because when he said, I'm going to be a professional football player, I was like, or he could coach, But the kid is really good. He's got a good arm. He's fast. He's got great instincts for somebody who's never played the game in an organized fashion other than throwing the ball around with his old man in the backyard. It really smoked it. And by the end of the season, he was learning to look off defenses. And he's in second grade. So when you're in second grade and you're focusing in on one target and you only got one other target, the entire defense just follows your eyes and you just throw to the other guy and he's wide open. And I wish I would have thought to tell him that earlier on, because he totally nailed it. And it was incredible. A fun experience. There was one downside, is that so the way that they do it is there's only 18 or four teams. So everybody makes it into the playoffs, is the way they did. We won one game during the regular season and we get there and we're the playoffs. So we have to play the number one seed, which is the Burbank 49ers. So it's the Burbank 49ers versus the Burbank Bills. And then there's the Burbank Seahawks and the Burbank Cowboys. Each coach picked their favorite team. And that's how the teams were decided. And the guy who's the coach of the 49ers here is like, he's a part of like the high school and he's been doing coaching. He's undefeated during his entire time coaching this age group. Like, he's intense, man. And so we played the game, and of course we lost it, but we held in there. We were pretty tight. We had them a little nervous until halftime. So then we go across the way, and we were rotating the younger kids in, but it's a kindergarten, first, and second grade league. And I don't know where you come down on this, but I'm not a big fan of the, participation trophy stuff. I feel like I'm kind of old school in that way. I don't know. I could be wrong. I only have this perspective because it's what I've experienced in my life. And maybe if something happened to me that I would have, maybe if I didn't get a trophy that I really felt like I deserved or something, maybe then I would feel jilted. But I just think that there's something about earning stuff that's such a high priority to me personally, that the participation trophy I find condescending and patronizing and insignificant. It belittles the person who's getting it in an unfair manner that they don't even know it's happening. That's my opinion of it. So they don't do that in this league, but there was a coach on the team who wanted us to rotate players in more. And we did. We rotated. Everybody played at least 3 to 4 plays a game, but our head coach wanted to stay competitive and give the kids a chance to win because we had lost a lot of games that year, and winning feels good, right? And so he played a lot of the older kids. And the way I see it is that the way this league is designed, the reason that they do kindergarten, first, and second grade, and then once you get out of that division, it's a third grade only, a fourth grade only, and then I think a fifth, and then it goes into sixth or whatever. And this is just flag football. But it's because you get these kindergarten kids and they get a little taste, right? They get a little taste when they run a couple plays and they learn at practice and all that stuff, so that by the time they're in second grade, they're really, really good. And Jack is in kindergarten. He's the smallest kid on the team. And if I put him out there all the time, he would just get run over and trampled on. And so anyway, all of a sudden in the last game, there was a parent and this coach who were like, everybody needs to play. And we wanted to win this game I did too. I'm not going to fairly, but I think that there's an importance to the hierarchy. The head coach wanted to win the last game and come in third place. So he was like, let's keep playing the older kids to give us a chance. And we were doing really well with the older kids, but when we mostly had the younger kids, and anyway we mishmashed, we didn't have any depth on this team. So anyway we mishmashed it, we weren't going to score. And so I was talking to this mom, and weirdly enough, 2 weeks prior to this, her son, who's a great, great runner, and you could tell that the family is all athletic and stuff, and the kid's great. I jokingly called him the Earl Campbell of flag football because nobody could pull his flags. And he was most of our offense early on. But then he started doing a lot of like dancing and standing still, which gave him a chance to come in and pull the flag. And so I would tell him, I go, dude, you got to run straight. You got to run straight. So one of the games, the dad came up to me, very nice. And he said, hey, pull him from the game if you have to, but I don't want him to learn to just run straight. In tackle football, you cut back, and that's what I want him to do. I want him to learn for tackle. I know you got to coach him for flag, and that's what you're doing, but I want him to learn for tackle. And in my opinion, I think that there's something to what he says, but in tackle football, you don't want him to stop and dance, a cutback. And I wasn't telling him not to cut back. I was telling him that he needed to keep running and pick a direction. And we did exercises in practice, and this kid probably missed most of the practice, ironically, as well as the other kid who's the coach's kid was like complaining that they didn't play a lot were the ones that missed most of the practice. And so he said, pull him from the game. And so this mom is like complaining to me. He's like, you know, you four plays in a game isn't enough. And I said, and it had already been addressed how he'd missed practice. And I said, he's young. I said, he's in kindergarten. I go, when he gets older, he's going to play more. And she goes, well, I just don't think you feel that. Like if Jacob was only playing three or four plays a game, because Jacob was playing both offense and defense. She goes, I think you would be bothered by it. And I said, because the reason Jacob plays as much as he does is because he's the oldest kid on the team and he gets it. He gets what he's doing. But if you look at Jack, who's my other son, your son plays more than Jack and I'm not complaining. And I'm the guy who's putting him in. I said, but it's because Jack is younger and I want Jack to learn just like I want your son to learn and develop. Because she's like, well, you have to develop him. I said, we develop him in practice. That's when we develop him. But you can't throw him in a game. Because then I think, you know, they could lose self-esteem and it becomes a huger issue. So I just wish that whole thing didn't end that way. What else has happened? This happened today, right before I started doing the show. We came back home and this weekend the boys had a party, like a pool party. One of their friends who's really awesome threw like an end of the school year party for his class. So we all went over there and they got one of those cool water slides that they all go down. And so they're outside playing. We're there for 2 or 3 hours. And then yesterday, Natalie's company did like their company picnic. So they got us all. We go out to like the Agora Hills. I don't know how many of you know Southern California, but it's close to Malibu. It's near the beach. And they have like on the way there, it's kind of like there's a lot of horse ranches and stuff, people with a lot of land. And then they have one of those just areas that somebody owns and they have these big grass plots and you could go and they bring bouncy houses out there and those bungee things that you could jump around on a trampoline type stuff. And then they had one year they had a mechanical bull. This year they had that, but it was a surfboard. And they have this pool that has probably, I'm guessing, a 40-foot serpentine, like snake-bodied water slide. So for those of you who've been listening to the show for a while, you'll probably remember me telling the story of how Natalie drowned them before, where she showed up after I had been going down with Jack. She shows up with Jacob because they were playing bingo down below. And so we would already been going down the slide. But when I'd go down to the slide, I'd have to pick Jack up and hold him up so his head didn't go underwater because he wasn't a good swimmer. So then she goes, okay, I'll go with Jacob. So Jacob goes down with her. Jacob was an okay swimmer, but she accidentally pushes him underwater. So now Jacob wants to go with me. So I take Jacob the next time. Well, she almost drowns Jack too. So by the time we get up to the third time, neither kid will go down with her. So I have to go down with both of them. Thankfully, the guy was like, you could do it this one time, but you know, you can't keep doing this. So I was like, all right. So this year though, they got old enough to where they could go down the slide on their own. And it's this part of parenting that I think moms, maybe not all moms, but I think moms have hangups about this, where a dad, when I see my kids growing up and I see these moments where it's like, you know, before I had to be extra careful of down the water slide. Now Jack is like, wait here, just wait here. I'm going to go by myself. And he's my younger one. And I was like, great, go do it. And I'm just sitting there. I'm like, the end is near. It's coming. Soon I will be free again. But my wife, Natalie's like, oh, they're growing up so fast. And I know I've said this before, but I wish I could get her on board with this idea that you are an adult for more of your life than you are a child. So why spend any time hanging on to the concept or the lifestyle of being a kid when the idea is like, get them grown up. Don't make them be a kid forever, because the longer you make them, you hold them back into childhood. And I'm not saying you can't treat them with kindness and every once in a while have a cuddle with mom. I'm not saying any of that. I'm just saying, the longer that you keep them back and want to hang on to them, the longer it takes for them to eventually get out of that nest. And because everybody, just like a bird, oh, this is so cheesy, but you know, just like a bird, we've seen it where they fall out, they have to stumble, fall on their face. We all did it. And so you have to let them go. You have to let them go take the water slide by themselves. Go do all that stuff. Let them grow up, because then you'll get to see them grow up even faster and enjoy more of their life without the struggle. Because you have to have that fallen before you can learn how to fly. Oh, my God. It is so beautiful. Oh. So we were having this conversation. The point of why I bring all that up is because the boys had a full weekend. I don't do sunblock either. I know that's going to make me a horrible parent. I don't get like we went to this pool party on the at the person's house, and they're just hanging out, and it's mostly shade, but everybody's getting hosed down with sunblock. I feel like I'm not saying my kid should get skid cancer or get burnt like a lobster, but if you're going to be in the sun for a little bit and it's not too hot outside and there's shade and you're rolling around in water, you know, who cares? It builds a little character. So we go there, and Jacob, we didn't do sunblock, and this was a long time, so I'm currently a little burnt. I got a little soreness in the shoulders. Natalie, of course, gets burnt like crazy because she puts sunblock on the kids, but not her. And the kids were tired. So they wake up this morning, and I don't know why this happens, but when I'm with the children, there's very rarely is there anything wrong. They don't complain about aches or pains. This is why, as a society, with, you know, the basic leaning towards pussification of mankind, I think maybe we should. Here's the thing. I'm going to tread lightly. I'm not saying that moms aren't capable of this, because I know there's some hardcore, tough-ass moms, especially single moms. But I'm just saying that a dad, stereotypically, is more likely to be like, just rub some dirt on it, you're fine. Not all dads. But This thing where as soon as they come home, as soon as Natalie walks in the door from work, all of a sudden everything hurts on these boys. All my head hurts, all my this. So anyway, they get up this morning because now they're in their, they go to where they used to go to preschool. It's like a daycare during the summer. And they get up and all of a sudden they're sore. They have sore throats and they don't feel good. So Natalie's like, you know, I checked them. They don't have a fever. So I'm going to take them to the school, but as soon as you're done with work, you might want to come and pick them up. So, of course, I go to pick them up from the school, and what's happening? They are running around, they're jumping, they're totally fine, okay? So I go, okay, I'll come back in a few minutes. I ran an errand because they didn't want to leave. So I go and I pick them up, I bring them back home. Jacob made it, I don't know, a half hour in the house, and I said, hey, I'm going to come out and do a podcast. And he goes, okay. And then he goes, I don't feel good. And I said, oh, what's wrong? He goes, oh, I'm sore. And actually, I think I actually asked him because he just looked like he was a little tired. I said, what's going on? He goes, oh, I don't feel good. I got a sore throat and I'm a little sore. And I said, okay. He goes, I just don't feel good. It hurts. I said, well, I can give you some medicine. You want some more medicine? He was like, yeah, sure. And so we do the Advil and Tylenol, and they're both grape flavored. To give you an idea of the life that I live, the boy had grape Advil in the morning. And now I'm offering him, how dare I? I am offering him grape Tylenol. I know. I'm a horrible father. I don't know why you would offer a kid for grape Tylenol when you've given him grape Advil. He knows the joys of grape ibuprofen. Why would you soil his experience with grape-flavored acetaminophen?
Asshole.
I know. So I give him the little 2 teaspoons of it and set the cup down. And this is what my son says. So this is why the only part of me that makes me worried that as a civilization we are doomed. Because I set the cup down and he said, that's not what I took this morning. And I said, well, it's Tylenol. That's not what I took this morning. The indignant attitude that he gives, like, I'm not drinking this swill. How dare you, sir, insult my palate with grape-flavored acetaminophen. I'm an Advil man, I tell you. And I was like, dude, you gotta just drink it and take it. And he was like, no, I'm not going to do it, man. I'm not going to do it. Fight me back and forth. And then I finally said to him, I said, hey, if you don't want to drink it, that's fine. I said, you could sit there and feel shitty like you feel now, or you could take the medicine and it'll numb the pain a little bit. That's your call. I don't care, but that's what you're getting. And he's sitting there. So now he's in a corner. So he's sitting there and he's looking at me and he's like, he goes, do I have to take it? He goes, will it help the pain that much? I said, I don't know. I go, but dude, I go, just dip your finger in it. What are you so afraid of? He goes, it doesn't taste good. And this is the thing that I don't understand about children. In fact, here, let me take a quick break, and then I will come back and explain more about the thing I don't understand about children. Okay? Okay. So the thing I don't understand about children is I get the not liking. I don't ever expect a kid to like medicine. Because he says, he goes, well, why does it have to taste so bad? I said, I don't know. It's medicine. I imagine, and I know we have a pharmacist mom, I think, who listens to the show, that I imagine that if medicine tasted good, then you would have more of a problem of people just constantly taking it for the sake of how it tastes. I know that the Claritin, those little grape tablets of Claritin, the kids like them, and they kind of they're similar to like a sweet tart, and so they sometimes they'll just ask for them. I'm like, no, you can't have that's and then I go, wait, hold on, that's Benadryl, that's an antihistamine, they'll go to sleep. No, so I'm sitting there, I go, I don't know, it tastes bad, it's medicine, it's never going to taste good. I said, but you decide. I go, you could deal with some 30 seconds of discomfort by swallowing 2 teaspoons of liquid and then taking a drink of water, or you could deal with hours of feeling uncomfortable. Those are your options. Whatever you want to do, bud, it's your world. And he's just weighing it all out. And I said, I go, you got to get over this thing. And then, of course, I do this heavy-handed, you know, everything is a life lesson because I'm a dick of a dad. Which, by the way, I should get dick of the dad t-shirts. Anyway, I said to him, I go, son, this is life. Right here, this is life in a nutshell. Life is about taking these little moments of anxiety and anxiousness and learning to push through them because it's all in your head. You used to, and this is why I'm bringing all this up, he used to swallow the grape Tylenol and the grape Advil like it was medicine. And like I said, I'm okay with a kid not wanting Brussels sprouts. I get that medicine tastes bad, and I get you don't want to have that. But what you can't do is have it and love it one day and then 2 weeks later say, I don't do that. That makes me want to end you. It makes me want to just get in the car and Thelma and Louise on out of here and never come back because I need progress. Every parent is in a frustrated rut of just waiting to get out of whatever situation they're in, whether it's diapers, whether it's teething, whether it's college. I don't know. I don't know how it's going to be when they get older. I don't know dating. I don't know how to navigate any of those waters. All I know is that I've spent so much of my time sitting there worried about when am I going to get out of this? When is this going to be done? Whatever it is I'm in. So right now I'm in the, when am I going to be done with the bitching and moaning about everything? They can't appreciate anything. And I don't think that's ever going to happen. I'm sure it's not going to happen when they're teenagers. But so then he's sitting there and he's having this like conversation with me about taking the Tylenol. And I just said to him, I go, dude, it's great Tylenol. You used to love it. Just drink it. Like, we're wasting so much. What are we doing here? What is all this about? Just drink it. And I said, here's the crazy thing about this, Jacob. I said, you're going to swallow this stuff and you're going to laugh and you're going to feel dumb because you wasted all this time worrying about it. I said, you got to push through the anxiety. That is what life is. Life is all about confronting situations that make you afraid or scared and going, I got to get this done. And the sooner and the better you get at that, the more the world becomes your oyster. And I think that's kind of true. I'm not to get up on a soapbox, but I mean, holy balls, everything that I've ever been afraid of or all that stuff. Afterwards, don't you kind of look back and go, what the fuck was I thinking? Like, realistically, I can't think of a single experience in my life that I was petrified of happening. And then you look at it now and go, it's wildly insignificant. And so I'm trying to get him to understand that it's like, let's jump to the insignificance of the fear and get to that point. And I told him, I said, it's like I had a doctor who suggested me. I said, I don't understand why you don't trust me because I am honest with you to a flaw. I said, I've had people tell me that I shouldn't tell you when you're getting a shot because a lot of parents would just rather have their kid, like, instead of dealing with all the anxiety, right? They wait till they get there and then they go, oh, shot time. And then you have 2 minutes of anxiety in a concentrated dose and then it's over and you can move on, right? And I said, but I tell you guys a week out. Why? Because I think it's important, A, that you deal with that anxiety. And I'm not judging anybody who does it the other way. I truly, honestly, I don't care. This is just the way I like to do it, okay? But I say, but to me, I feel like it's more dishonest for me to know that you're going to have to get a shot and then wait to tell you because I feel like that would create distrust. But here's what I can tell you, having lived both sides or having lived on the other side of that is a better way of saying it, is that it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. There's anxiety either way. And when you do it my way, it's like, oh, there's a freak out when you tell them kind of, and it's just more numb and slow burn. And then when they get there, so far, Jack has gotten past the shot thing. I think I told the story about by the time he got to, he had four vaccinations in one sitting, or maybe it was five. And the last one was the flu shot. And I'll never forget that kid because I was so damn proud of him. Is he leaned into it. He pushed his shoulder towards the needle because he was just wanted it to be done. And you could tell it hurt him. But anyway, so I had the argument with the anxiety. Of course, he swallows it and then he goes, that was it. And then this is what's great about parenting, too. You know, you spend all this time trying to help them. And guide them and nurture them and tell them how life is going to be because you're so older, so much older. And he said, oh, that is a good point, Jessica. I just saw in the chat room. She says, wait, is this a child you spent a whole night up with who's still puked with the meds? Yes, this is that child. It's an old episode where I had an emotional breakdown because I thought I was just like the whole time I probably stayed out there 5-6 hours trying to get him to take this medicine. And I felt like at every moment I was 30 seconds away from getting him. Oh, my God, was that a hell pit. And here's the thing. We're nowhere. I mean, he's a little bit better. Like, he'll take Sudafed now. The trick I've learned is to chill it. Treat it like booze if you make it cold. And so we keep our Sudafed in the fridge now. So it's just ready in a moment's notice. And you can just, they pop it down their gullet. But anyway. Oh, no, I lost my train of thought. I'm sorry, guys. But so we went to he just takes it. It's that thing of where they say to you like, wow, this is so weird. And I wish I was a better grown up to where that didn't bother me. But it's like, yeah, that was nothing. And I just go, yeah, I know it was nothing. That's why I told you it was nothing for the 15 minutes leading up to you just swallowing 2 teaspoons of grape flavored syrup. And then we had the great, delightful conversation, which was fun, where he said, why don't they make sour cream? He was eating sour cream and onion chips. Why don't they make sour cream and onion flavored medicine? I said, because it would still taste bad. It's medicine. It's supposed to taste bad. I learned from my dentist recently, which this may be a whole part of the psychology of it. Listerine mouthwash. I tried a different mouthwash one time, and my mouth didn't feel as clean. So I went back to the Listerine. And the reason I went to the other one is because the Listerine burns, right? And I was talking to my hygienist, and she told me that they actually found that people stopped buying Listerine, the option when they made it to where it didn't hurt, that nobody bought it because they felt like it wasn't working. How stupid, just stupid monkeys are we that unless it burns our mouth, we feel like it's not working. And I feel that way. Now, after I heard it, I was okay with it, but I still deal with it, which I think is even more dumb. But and maybe that's just part of it. Maybe that's all. Here's what I can tell you. That's definitely a part of being a parent. For anybody who's got more than one kid, or hell, I can't even, 3, 4, fuck you at 5. But for you to go through that, you have to be ignorant to the pain and the frustration and the exhaustion to be able to be like, yeah, I want to do it again. I'll totally do that again. That's totally worth doing all over again. All right, I am. We're gonna take another quick break. We'll come back. Oh, there was. What was I? All right, we'll take a break. I'll be right back. Okay, I had on the way back from the company picnic, I had a funny conversation with my wife the other day, and I don't know if I would recommend you all having this conversation, but I can't remember how it came up. I think I was listening to another podcast, and they were talking about allergies and how I don't know why, but it made me think of something where I was like, what do you think are my shortcomings, is what I said to my wife. And I don't like this for multiple reasons. I don't like this part about me because, A, it seems like such a like 1989 stand-up comic joke of like, do you think I'm fat? Like, you know what I mean? It makes me feel more effeminate. And I don't know why I'm not okay wearing that like a badge of honor. It's got to be some stupid insecurity that I'm not aware of in my head that it bothers me that when I see these little moments where I'm like a chick, but it doesn't bother me enough to where I obviously change anything. I still walk around with a full-blown mangina. But I was like, what do you think are my shortcomings? And Natalie was sitting there. Natalie navigates it like a husband would, I imagine, if I were one. It was that she sits there and she goes, and I could see her trying to figure out, do I answer or not answer? Because if I answer, it's a lose-lose, right? If I answer, then there's going to be some kind of conversation of, well, why do you think that's a shortcoming or anything? Even though I don't think I do that. But if I don't answer, then I'm also allowing this person to either A, think I'm lying, or B, think that they're perfect. And Natalie couldn't answer. She's like, I don't. And I go, come on, dear. You really are honestly going to sit there and expect me to believe that I'm perfect? And here's what she said. And I thought it was interesting because it blew up in my face a little bit. She said, you can't let things go. And I said, rightfully, I said, well, what does that mean? She goes, well, anything that's little, like anything with the kids or something, like we had this hilarious moment where we're driving home and Jacob has been helping Jack learn how to read. And so they're in the back car. We'll give him a word, like, say, I think we were talking about soy was the word he was trying to spell words that rhyme with boy because they both ended in O-Y. And Jack really thought it was funny that it would frustrate Jacob that he couldn't get the concept that all he had to do was figure out the first letter. And so it would be, we would say soy, and then Jack would go S, and then, okay, what's next? And he would go R, and we'd be like, no, not R. And then he'd go, ah, oh, dang it. He'd go A, and we'd go, no. He'd go B, and we'd go, no. So Jacob, as soon as does this the second time, Jacob says, you're just guessing. I'm not going to help you if you're guessing, which is a verbatim quote of things that I've said to them when they're learning their homework, like they're doing their homework, and I will help them. I will help walk them through the process, but if they're just going to sit there and take pot shots, then I'm going to be like, well, now you have to suffer because you've decided to disengage your brain. So go do whatever you got to do, and when you want help, come back to me. So he says, if you're just guessing, I'm not going to help you. And then Jack goes, B, and then he goes, don't you dare say C. And so that is an example of Jacob, like, a normal person would just let Jack spin his wheels and run through the alphabet and who cares. But it just incensed Jacob to no end, just irritated him that he would just rattle off the alphabet guessing and not take this opportunity to learn to spell words seriously. And she goes, but so Natalie says, it's, you can't let things go, which I think is true. I've struggled with that I wish I could be the kind of husband that, you know, whatever she did, I was just like, yeah, whatever it is, what it is. And I didn't like, have to, you know, get on her ass about, like, here's the thing. I'm debating, even after this conversation. There was a time a while ago, you may remember it if you're a longtime listener, where I was getting in a fight with my wife because for the majority of our relationship, I've been a homemaker, and then I got this full-time job, and we had a house. And so I was like, well, I can't be the guy who does the laundry and fixes the toilet and the sprinklers and changes the oil in the car and is cleaning the floors. And I go, it's at some point, there needs to be some kind of division. Like, I'm not even breaking this down by 1950s gender roles. I'm not even saying that. I'm saying that, you know, you at least have to be the person to remind me, say, hey, don't forget to get the oil changed in the car. Something like that. Because to me, it's like there needs to be mutual investment. Otherwise, there's always going to be animosity. And maybe that's just because I can't let things go. So Natalie got really invested, and it got to a point where, especially now, because I get up at 3 o'clock in the morning and then I go to work, is that when I come home and go to bed at night, she made the bed. And now it's back to we're like teenagers. And I don't know what it is about wanting to get into a bed that is made, because I like to think of myself as a rational person. But a rational person understands the concept that I'm going to get into this bed again and just mess it up. But there's just something that triggers the little monkey part of my brain that I go, I like it. It seems orderly. It seems nice. It seems good. So I want that feeling. And so I'm trying to figure out whether or not I should broach this subject with her because she said my shortcoming is I can't let things go. And yet she, Now I'm, how do I broach the subject with her where I say, hey, by the way, how come you stopped making the bet? You know what I mean? I can't. I'm stuck between a rock and a hard place. And I know that there are other people who especially are the homemakers, like, well, just come home and make your own fucking bed. And I get that. And I will most likely do that. But then it's back to, well, then what are you invested in? Because right now we're doing this thing where once a week the kids are like, hey, I don't have any underwear. And I'm the one who's taking care of them until they get home from work. And so they're doing baths because we do baths for Natalie gets home, blah, blah, blah. And I'm just like, I want to say like, hey, when are you going to, and I kind of lightly, I don't like being passive aggressive guy, but I think this is the way normal people are supposed to interact. You see, the way I want to do it is I want to go, hey, listen, I thought we had an agreement that you're going to do the laundry, because the agreement is also that I pay the mortgage, say, and you've never had to remind me to pay the mortgage, and I haven't missed it. So therefore, why is it that I have to ride your ass about laundry? Now, again, I think that's a poor example for me to give myself, because laundry is probably every, I don't know, 5 days, maybe a week at the most, and mortgages are only once a month. But there's multiple examples of that in my life where I feel like very little of my, maybe the one that works out in her favor is missing a turn on the road, I guess. I'll give her that. So that's how I want it to be. I want it to be like, hey, you, remember you made the bed and then the laundry was done? What's going on? And but I also, to go back to what I was talking about earlier on the show, I also know that she lost her dad, and she said she's coming out of it, but she went through a funk for a couple weeks where, and it's unfair to call it a funk, I think. I'm sorry I chose that word, but that she just didn't want to do anything. And I don't feel like that's a funk. I think that that's just sad. You know what I mean? Like, you feel sad and you don't want to do anything. And so I get it. But again, if I was a good grown-up, I'd probably just say, you know, because I'm kind of like, well, when does that end? When do we go back to making the bed? Now, if things change in my life and I'm not working anymore, I'll make the bed. It's not about that. It's not about me being pampered. It's about investment. It's about equal investment. Not even equal. I don't know. But to get back to my story about the not letting go, is that I always saw my inability to let things go was a side effect, if you would, of my persistence. Like, I am antagonistic in my pursuit of things. Like, I really will go and go and go to the point where I have to watch it, especially when I'm reliant on other people, that I have to pace myself. I have to kind of pull it in. But I don't do that with my wife, because she's my wife. And I said, she goes, yeah, so it could be good. And I said, well, how much of it is good? Like, most of it? And she goes, yeah. And I could tell by the way she was saying it. I was like, well, what would you say? Like 70-30, 80-20, 90-10. And she goes, 60-40. Like 60% of it is good. And only 40% of it, though, is a pain in her ass. And it's an interesting thing for me in my head, is that I can sit there and I could go, I know I'm a pain in the ass. I know that I'm very opinionated and that I plan things, and I'm borderline obsessive compulsive with how anal I am. Listen to that, ladies. I mean, come on. If that doesn't want to get you to hop into the worship bandwagon, I don't know what would. That's just a catch, is what they call that. I mean, if you strap onto that, the fact that I've got a 36-inch waistline, a lot of gray hair, and a borderline plot of sod on my back. Yeah, it's great. I'm a real catch. You're lucky to have me. Oh God, does it suck to be a man? Sucks balls to be a man. All right. So I'm going to work on that, though. That was the reason I brought all that up, is I don't know. I think it's a fun exercise. If you ever feel like your marriage is doing too good and you just want to throw caution to the wind, just randomly ask your partner, go, hey, what do you think my shortcoming is? Because the funny thing was, is that Natalie's like, well, that's just who you are. I don't even really see it as a shortcoming. I just see you for who you are. And I don't understand that. Like, how could you just accept people? Because she said, well, what do you think my shortcoming is? And I'm not kidding. This is how it went. What do you think my shortcoming is? Time management. I said, you're just bad at time management. I go, you get things done, sure. But if something goes wrong, like your whole day is just cattywampus and it throws everything off and you get super frustrated and all that. And she jokingly calls me the closer, because that's what I do. I get shit done. But I think it's just, I'm not great. I'm not amazing at it. I'm more persistent in my time management, and I don't let things go. So therefore, they must get done. There is no ifs, ands, or buts about it. I can't casually stroll through life. All right. I am going to, let's take another break. We'll come back, do a little moment of the week.
You made them. You love them. And sometimes you want to choke the living shit out of them. But occasionally they give you that one sweet moment. This is that moment. Moment of the week, brought to you by Dad Gear. All your child traveling needs packed into stylish, practical perfection. Designed by real dads for real dads and moms. Don't be the guy with a diaper purse. Be the man with the Dad Gear diaper backpack. Go to thedadpodcast.com and click on the Dad Gear logo on the right-hand side. It's made in the USA.
I hope I have not, I'm not oversharing these, but the, somebody in the chat room tell me if I've talked about Jacob and his Sundays at home. I'll do Jack's first, but Jack got star student, and they do these things at the school where they pick certain kids. I think they do them twice a year, and you can get like most improved. And to go back to my participation trophy, is that I think that's a solid thing. Like a most improved, I don't think that's a backhanded compliment at all. That means somebody who's working hard, and that's a solid example of Jack. Because my siblings and their step siblings, and they're so much older than I am, I never really got to see a close comparison and I don't have a model for parenting that. But, and I'd love to hear some of your thoughts if you want to email them in to show@thedadpodcast.com. But there is a difference in Jack academically from Jacob. I mean, Jacob is in second grade. He's reading at a sixth grade reading level. He just naturally gets things. And I think, in my opinion, for anybody who has a preschool kid, if you got a kid who's on the cusp, we did some reading and even our pediatrician suggested the same thing, is that if you've got a kid who's on that cusp age, just wait a year and let him start kindergarten at six, because it makes the academics so much easier. We also, Jacob at the time was wrestling with some insecurity. And so we thought, well, maybe he's just not ready. We would rather him, you know, feel a little more confident when he goes into this new school, blah, blah, blah. And I said, so we did it. And Jacob is like skating, like he's golden. And Jack is average, but there you could see a difference. Like when Jacob went into kindergarten, he didn't really know how to read or write that well. But when he came out, he was cooking on all four cylinders. Jack is, he's so. He's like, a lot of it is still phonetic spelling. He's not getting a lot of the words right, and all of the letters are really mashed together. And the teacher showed us this cool developmental, there's stages to their writing. And so he's just kind of in the middle, but he needs to get a little closer. So I'm probably going to get him a tutor. But so Jack got most effort, I think is what, most effort for his star student. And it was cute because they do this thing where you get a letter in the mail saying your kid has gotten a star student award. And he, they want you to surprise him. So you show up at the school's little theater auditorium thing and the kids come in, but usually they see you when they walk in. So I was there for Jacob first. Jacob got one for academics. And then I came back to do Jack's, and I sat in the back of the room, and Jack leaned, was looking back, and he could see me, and he was telling his kindergarten teacher, he was like, oh, he goes, my dad's here. I got an award. And she goes, well, you don't know that. He could just be here checking out. He's in the booster club, you know. And he says to his teacher, he goes, you know, I hold the door for a lot of people. like that's what it takes in order to, and I don't know why. I found that touching the way he said, he goes, you know, I hold the door for a lot of people, you know, is how he said it to her. And I thought it was cute that it had nothing to do with why he was getting the award. And I also like, because of how I know Jack, I think he's probably only holding the door because he thinks it'll get him an award in some way, shape, or form. That's just how he's wired. But Jacob, so people are telling me that I have not shared this story. We went out to dinner. And we were talking about getting some Sundays, and most of the car wanted to go to Baskin Robbins, I didn't want to go to Baskin Robbins. Everybody else wanted to go to Baskin Robbins. I said, well, we got stuff to make Sundays at home. And so there was a lot of this back and forth on that. And so Jacob randomly just blurts out, and he's a little mini me. And I find myself feeling more and more proud of that, probably more than I should. But he said, Sundays at home are free. Like, he's 8 years old, and he understands the concept of when I say, yeah, but we can have Sundays at home. He also sees the bonus benefit of those don't cost anything, even though he's not paying for it, see? But he knows that it comes out of the overall Worsham coffer. And I like that. I like that about him. And so right now, like I've said before on the show, my dad has always said, you don't have favorites, but you always have one that you're more happy with than the others, kind of a thing. And so right now it's Jacob, because Jack also has a strong need to ruin every dinner that we ever have. All right, so that was the show, and I'm going to try to do more of these like end of the show plugs in the middle of the show, because I think it'll just help overall, help move things along. Here, there are some new developments coming up. I think Natalie is going to join the show on an almost regular basis because her job is changing, so she will have more time, which I think will be a lot of fun, and I think most of you will really truly enjoy. And I got a new guest, Jane Wells, who's somebody I know from KFI, who's coming on. So I think that will be very, very exciting. Send me an email to show@thedadpodcast.com. You could check out producer Michelle's podcast with me. It's available at KFIAM640.com, or it's via iTunes as well. What else can I tell you? All of the social media handles for the show are in the description of this episode. You could listen live at mixlr.com/dadpodcast. They have a free app you could put on your smartphone, and all you got to do is put a password and an email, and then you find the Dad Podcast and you follow it. And then what happens is that every time I go live, it sends you an email and lets you know the show is live. And what I usually do is I play music for about 15, 20 minutes to give everybody a chance to notice the email and then come and tune in. And I think that's it. We're making a big push this summer, and I'll get into it. I'm babbling now, and I apologize for this scatterbrained episode. I just wanted to get back in the saddle and get back on it. And again, no need to send any condolences to my wife. She's okay. Somebody said in the chat room that it'll take more than 2 weeks. Yes, I'm not that ignorant to it. Not that you were saying I was. I'm sorry. That came across wrong, Jessica. But I get it, and I think as much as we joke about me being insensitive to her needs, I'm very aware that, you know, she's had a couple of moments where it sucks. I had one where you just cry. You start crying out of nowhere because something happened when we were moving him. I mean, this is my father-in-law, a man who I did adore and admire mostly for his patience, and I'm not saying that to be smart-alecky or rude, but I truly did. He was an old-school guy who just took everything on the chin. For what my wife said about my inability to let things go, that was his superpower. I mean, he just crushed that. And I do wish I had a little bit of that, and I will try to incorporate it into my personality. But my brother-in-law found just a little thumbnail-sized photo of him when he was in high school, and I don't know why, but walking by, it made me miss him. A guy that I honestly say that because he was there, maybe, I never missed. During the time that I knew him, but we had weird conversations about politics or whatever. He would tell me his old construction stories. I'm sorry, I'm babbling again. It's the end of the show, but I'm aware, and I appreciate all you guys for tuning in and sticking with the show. Here's what I could say. I'll say it now because it feels right to me, and I'm excited to be back. Is that if you know me at all from KFI, please do not say anything about this, especially on social media or to anyone, because this is not a thing that they make public in the radio world. But I turned in my notice for the Bill Handel show. So by the end of this month, I will no longer have a full-time job. I will have maybe a part-time job, possibly. And it's because I want to focus my energy full-time on this show. And maybe another podcast. We're going to do a real estate podcast with Natalie. And there's some other things that I'm going to try and build. And I'm going to try and see if I can't do this on my own, build my own audience. And I rely heavily on you guys and word of mouth. And I hope that I know this past couple months it's not an example of that, but I hope that I act and behave in a way that shows you my real appreciation of your dedication to the show, as heavy-handed and cheesy as that may sound. But a way you can help me is by going to the Facebook page, facebook.com/dadpodcast, and then doing the Survey Monkey. If you have not, a lot of you saw it on Facebook, but I haven't been doing too many episodes. So take a minute to go do that now and let me know, because I got some really cool information about what your wants and needs are that are really going to change the direction of the show. Not too far off from where it currently is, but it's small little things that I think everybody will appreciate. And if you make your opinion heard, then all it does is make the show better for you. So on behalf of my dumb babbling self, this is Justin Worsham saying thank you. Hug your kids. Hump your loved ones and stay frosty.